Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Roldan. I'm your hostess for this evening, and we're so happy that you could be with us tonight. Remember, all of you out there listening and my friends and family in the chat room, you are this nation. We don't belong to the government. The government belongs to us. Tonight's topic is a question. What is an educated woman? Often on this show, I talk about our public education system and its flaws and its few successes. But tonight, I would like to talk about the differences between the conservative and liberal view of what constitutes an educated member of our species who just happens to be female. I have not been watching the Democratic National Convention this week, partly because I really don't want to be ill having to go to work every morning. So I have assiduously avoided listening to the I don't know what to call it. It certainly isn't truthful. I'm trying to be a lady and not use pejorative terms, but I guess the best thing I can say is listening to the talk from the liberal mouths at the Democratic National Convention. And it struck me last week and this week that there is a wide gap between the view of women and their role and function in society and as human beings, between the liberal and conservative thinking patterns. Liberals, as personified by our current Democratic Party, which, by the way, is not your father and mother's or your grandfather and grandmother's Democratic Party, the contrast on their side to the liberal progressive. A woman is a functioning baby machine that doesn't want to be one. And because she doesn't want to be one, she should have the complete control over her own ability to conceive, her own ability to keep what has been conceived, and her own ability to destroy what has been conceived if it's inconvenient for her. Also, in the liberal progressive view, this idea of womanhood should be at the forefront of every female voter's mind in November. The liberal progressive mindset, which is groupthink carried to ridiculous extremes, doesn't see women as individuals any more than they see men as individuals. In the liberal mind, women are a quote-unquote focus group or a quote-unquote voting bloc. The women's vote, women's issues, women's studies, women's concerns are clearly defined by liberal progressives as being solely connected with sexuality. Women are apparently not capable of doing anything except engaging in sexual activity without consequences. I was not brought up to believe that that is the end-all, be-all of what it means to be female. My friend Linda in the chat room says she doesn't care what they do with their bodies, just pay for it themselves. And I agree with her. I am not a spokesman for women. I am a woman, but I can no more speak for all women than I can speak for all chimpanzees or all fruit trees or all berry bushes or all goldfish. And I certainly cannot speak for all people, not even all conservatives, because I diverge from some of the views held by many conservatives. But in the liberal progressive mindset, the reproductive capability of women is obviously the most important thing about them. Well, my mother taught me that the most important thing about me was my character, not whether or not I could produce a baby. She taught me that whether I decided I wanted to or I didn't want to was my decision, and that the surest way to avoid repercussions from my activities in that arena was to not engage in the activity without some form of protection, or not engage at all. It was a fairly clear choice, because I was never taught to believe that my only worth was how good I was in bed. Now, I'm not trying to be salacious here, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm not trying to have an X-rated radio show, but I have had a problem with the liberal left's view of women ever since the quote-unquote women's movement began back when I was in college. Yes, I'm old. My friend Linda says if you're dealing with sexuality, the most powerful organ involved is the brain, and she's quite correct. And I happen to have a very good brain, and I use it in everything that I do, unlike the progressive idea of women. I was taught that my worth and my value was cumulative. It included my intelligence, my skills, my willingness to learn, my courage, my integrity, my morality and ethics. It included the fact that I could be a mother. It included the fact that I could be a wife if I chose to be. And it included the fact that if I chose to do neither, I still had plenty to fall back on. And that as wonderful as sexual activity is, and believe me, I think it's wonderful. I like it. It isn't the only thing in my universe. I am not going to go mad or kill people if I am not engaged in bedroom activity every 10 minutes am more than a reluctant baby machine or a submissive sexual partner or a dominant sexual partner or a sexual partner at all. The conservative view of women, as exemplified by many of the speakers at the Republican National Convention, fits my view of who I am as an American woman much more closely than people like Sandra Fluke and Michelle Obama. Condoleezza Rice, Mia Love, Nikki Haley, Ann Romney, Susana Martinez are much more role models for me than a law student who wants somebody to pay for her birth control and her abortion so she can leap from bed to bed at will. When I educate the children that I work with, I am interested in developing their academic skills and their intellectual curiosity. And I don't teach differently to boys or girls, in the sense that both are quite capable of understanding how to work with fractions, how to do chemical experiments. The main theme of a literary work such as Jane Eyre, the ability to speak coherently and write coherently in their native language. In that sense, I am a unisex teacher. But I'm also aware that men and women, I say it, are different. And I'm also aware that that's a good thing. The conservative view of a woman's worth is not limited to being a reluctant baby producer or hopping bed to bed. The conservative view of a woman is as a human being who has an incredible gift from God of carrying within her body another life, a being with infinite possibilities. The conservative view of women does not say that this is the only gift a woman has. The conservative view merely thinks that this is the greatest gift. And I tend to agree. We have yet to find a man who can get pregnant. We have yet to find a man who has sufficient mammary glands to nurse an infant. And we have yet to find a man who is instantly awake the minute the baby turns over in the middle of the night. These things are biological components of the female of our species. And they are amazing. But the conservative viewpoint doesn't limit us only to having every issue in a political campaign revolve around motherhood. Speak at the Republican National Convention, many of them young women, are women of education and knowledge and clear reasoning ability. They know that the economic situation this country faces is god-awful. They are governors and mayors and a secretary of state and members of Congress. They have served the public, and many of them have raised families while they did it. They are the kinds of women that I would like to see my students become. Because they are human beings first, with broad interests and a desire to make things better for themselves, for their fellow human beings of both sexes, for their children and the children of the people they know, whether they have any or not. And they understand that sexual liberty and sexual freedom were pretty much explored to the fullest extent about 50 years ago. I remember, I was there. We did the quantity versus quality bit, ladies, okay? And most of us who survived it figured out that quality is better than quantity. But the Democrats and the liberal progressives who control the party have not grown up yet. They can't get away from the 60s idea that the most important right or freedom you have is unlimited sexual encounters with no consequences. And that's exactly what the Democratic Party platform on unlimited abortion on demand for any or no reason exemplifies. It is lack of consequences. It is woman as sexual object. No matter how much they try to convince everybody that they are the champion of the poor victim female, they will never succeed because we women do not consider ourselves victims of our reproductive cycles. We haven't thought that way in 60 years, ladies and gentlemen. Over 60 years. Women figured out that they could do more than raise babies during the 1940s when they had to because their men were fighting one of the greatest dangers this world has ever seen, Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan. We don't have to go back and break that ground all over again because they did it for us. We don't have to go back to the free love, tune in, turn on, and drop out mentality of the 1960s, fun though it was, because we did that. And we found out that it really didn't solve any problems. It just created a whole heck of a lot more of them. I am an educated woman, I believe. My friend Bill gave me a very high compliment today because in the chat room earlier he said that he thinks of me as an educated woman. And I am highly complimented. I believe that I am one. And I believe my education consists not only of my academic successes and failures, because everybody has them, but it is also what life has taught me. And my life, all almost 6 years ago, has taught me that I like being female, which is a good thing because I'm not a big believer in sex change operations. I enjoy being a woman. I like the physical aspects of being a woman. And forgive me, I'm not speaking to children here, but remember, guys, it's once and then you got to rest up. Not for us. 20 or 30 is not outside the bounds of possibility. And I'll bet you if you asked any man what part of being a woman he'd choose, I think it would be that one. I like the fact that I'm not expected to go out and kill a dragon. I don't want to. I am not expected to know how the internal combustion engine works, unless I want to know, and I don't. That's what I pay a mechanic to do. I like the fact that gentlemen, rise and offer me a chair. I like the fact that gentlemen wait for me to offer my hand. I like the fact that gentlemen open doors for me or help me carry things that are heavy. I like the fact that gentlemen treat me with respect and consideration and don't talk to or around me as they do in a football locker room, but treat me as a person with manners and taste. I enjoy those things. I'm quite happy about them. I don't find them degrading. I don't consider that I am being somehow or other made lesser. I don't think I'm being put on a pedestal to be worshipped from afar either. I had way too many blind dates in college to ever leave that one. But I like the fact that only a man who is drunk or stupid will say that he understands me. Because only a man who is drunk or stupid would be dumb enough to say that to any woman. Mm-hmm. Well, my husband says drunk and stupid. Because once a man tells a woman that he understands her, guess what, guys? You're going to have to do it all the time. And understanding us means you have to know what we want without us saying it first. All of you out there who have wives have run into this little problem of communication. We don't want to have to tell you, honey, I want you to do this on this time because I like it. We want you to be thinking about us so that you'll just intuitively know that today's the day we need you to walk in with a dandelion and say, you're beautiful, I've brought you this flower. Of course, we're never really going to get you to do that way, and we know it. But it's part of the mystique, and I like that. I like being a bit of a mystery. I am an educated woman, ladies and gentlemen, because, yes, I've been to school, and yes, I've experienced life, and yes, I am capable of reasonable, rational thinking. I'm also intuitive, and, like most women, when solving a problem, I think in relational terms. I like doing that because, in general, I like to be in a happy, comfortable atmosphere. And most women think relationally, and they know that doing one thing will create comfort in the atmosphere around them. And doing another thing that will achieve the same end, but be a different type of thing, will create strife and tension. And I don't know very many people who enjoy living in strife and tension. Part of what women do very well is understanding how to make a pleasant atmosphere for the people with whom they are interacting. And this is another one of our great gifts. How many parties have you been to, ladies and gentlemen? Have you noticed, if it's a couple giving the party, what the husband is doing and what the wife is doing? Have you noticed that the wife is usually keeping an eye out and noticing that so-and-so has emptied his drink and he's looking around and can't find the bar and goes up and says, oh, here, I know you like this. Fix yourself a scotch. And the husband is off talking football with four or five other guys. That quote-unquote inbuilt hostess in us educated women is another one of our great gifts. And I like exercising it. It pleases me to make the people around me happy and comfortable. Not only because of them, but because of me. I don't want to be in the middle of a nasty, tense, arguing, everybody hates everybody, screams at everybody situation, which is one of the reasons why I haven't been watching the Democratic National Convention. Because I don't like conflict very much. Now, that doesn't mean that I won't engage in it if I or my family are threatened by someone. I will engage in conflict then. But it isn't my first option. I am an educated woman. And I am a conservative educated woman. And I am very proud, even though I am not a Republican, of the speakers who represented my sex at the Republican convention. Because they were educated women also. in the best sense of the word. They took their gifts and their talents and their abilities and their curiosity, their courage, their ethics, and their values, and they went out and did great things with those. And they stood up and spoke from the heart and from the head about the things that 99% of this nation are concerned about. How do I work for a living and be paid enough to take care of myself and my family if I have one? How do we protect this great nation of ours? How do we give everyone the opportunity that our founding fathers built this nation on? How do we, as human beings, as well as women, exemplify the best in ourselves, govern ourselves as individuals, so that we can be engaged and self-governing citizens? They spoke for me, because what they talked about and what they saw as the prevailing issues that are of the greatest importance in the upcoming election are ones that I'm concerned about and I see as the greatest issues. Not my sexual freedom. Lord knows I'm not capable anymore of having children, so birth control doesn't interest me in the least. And I was never interested in aborting anything that was alive and within me. I never had a child of my own, but I have 3 stepdaughters and 5 going on 6 grandchildren through them. I have thousands of children in what I do. I'm not their mother, but I am their teacher. And all women, whether they teach professionally or not, are teachers, just like all men are. We teach by our example. We teach by our life experience that we share. We teach by being who we are. If I could have had any one of the women I mentioned who spoke at the Republican convention come to my school and speak to my students, I would be in ecstasy. If I heard that Sandra Fluke or Fluke or whatever she wants to call herself was planning on speaking to the students at my school, it would be very, very difficult for me to actually be there and put up with it. Because I don't believe that the girls I teach need to see themselves as walking female organs like Code Pink. I want them to see themselves as human beings with brains and hearts and limbs as well as female body parts. I want them to consider the responsibilities of being a wife, being a mother, being a single woman, being a professional woman. Every single path should be open to them. The liberal progressive mindset that created the so-called women's movement did what every liberal progressive ideologue always does. They took a pretty good idea and carried it to ad absurdum. They took it to infinity absurdly. Instead of the stated goal of opening opportunities so that a woman could choose her path and not be told by society she was limited, was a wonderful idea, and it was needed. And then it got to be a total farce. Instead of saying, as they initially tried to say they were going to, instead of saying, you can choose your path in life, if you choose the single life and a professional life, that's okay and that's great. If you choose married life and motherhood, that's okay and that's great. Instead, it was, you must choose a single life and professionalism, and if you choose marriage and motherhood, you're a victim, stupid, and incapable of being your own destiny. The fact that a surrogate for President Obama had the idiocy to state that Ann Romney, a mother of five boys, has never worked a day in her life? Now, I could see saying she did not work outside the home, which is perfectly true, but doesn't work? This is, again, the confusion, the difference between what an educated woman is. To a liberal progressive, an educated woman, like Ann Romney, is either a poor, deluded victim or a stupid housewife, a quote-unquote corporate wife, as Juan Williams called her, who hasn't the brains to do anything except make sure somebody gets a fresh martini when he runs out. I was very, very fortunate, ladies and gentlemen, in a lot of ways, in my parents. I had a father who believed that the most wonderful thing about human beings was the fact that they have a brain given by God and encouraged by God to use it. And I had a mother who was born in 1925 and brought up to think that marriage and motherhood were the best choice for a woman, tell all three of her daughters, if that's what you choose, it's a wonderful life. But if it's not what you want, you go for what you want that fulfills you. As I say, I was incredibly lucky. I can't take any credit. As far as I know, I didn't choose them. But they chose me. I came along 9 months and 17 days after my parents were married. They were young, 21. Not really ready to have a baby that soon. My dad was working as a draftsman for $40 a week. My mother had been working, but when she got pregnant, she knew she'd have to stay at home and take care of me. There wasn't daycare or public assistance or child care credit or Head Start or any of that stuff in 1946 when I was born. And my dad was offered a job by a radio station in St. Louis, Missouri, to be a radio talk show host. Yes, I come by it naturally, folks, in my jeans. But he had to turn it down because they only paid $35 a week. And he couldn't afford the $5 per week pay cut with a baby on the way. They didn't decide to abort me so that they could both have a career. They were scared and excited and amazed and happy and worried and all of the things that young parents, first-time parents were. And then there I was. Right there. And I was there for the first anniversary, too. And about 2 months after that, I got pneumonia. I nearly died. And it was a tough row for them to pay the hospital bill, but they did it. And never, ever, ever once in my childhood was I ever told anything but, thank God, you are still here with us, and how much we love you. My mother chose her path. It wasn't society that made her do it. It was her desire to be a wife and a mother, and she was a good one. She was a best mother because she told her daughters that she loved the path she chose, but she wanted them to choose their own, whether it was hers or something entirely new. My mother was a Democrat, ladies and gentlemen. That's what Democrats used to be. They aren't anymore. My mother and my father wanted me and my sisters to be educated women. My father believed that it was his duty as a parent to provide as much education as his children wanted or felt they needed. He paid for me to go to college and get my bachelor's degree. And several years after I finished college and was working, I went to him and said, "Daddy, I feel that I should try to pay you back for the cost of my education." And he looked at me and he said, "Kitten, don't even suggest it. That was my job as your father. And even if you wanted to, I would not take a penny. That was something that I had the duty and the privilege to do for you. And this was after I had changed my major away from the one he wanted me to engage in and distressed him terribly. Like I said, I was lucky. Oh, my dad was a Republican, by the way, so political discussions in our house were very, very interesting. But my parents understood, I believe, what an educated woman is. An educated woman is not a sheep who follows the latest messiah who will lead her from her victimized existence. An educated woman is not one whose whole life revolves around the bedroom. An educated woman is a mother who not only can sit with her children while they do their homework, she can help them with it because she learned the stuff herself. An educated woman is one who has chosen her life path and understood that whichever path she chooses, there are going to be tough times, hard times, disappointments, failures, times when you would just want to find a rock in the middle of the ocean so you can scream your lungs out. That is what an educated woman is. An educated woman is also a teacher. Not necessarily as a profession, but merely by being who she is. Because an educated woman teaches by example and not always by precept. An educated woman is curious. An educated woman never decides she's already learned everything there is to know. An educated woman does not assume that everybody in a certain group has to, by law, think exactly alike on every issue, every topic, every subject, every moment of every day. An educated woman understands that individual liberty comes hand in hand with individual responsibility. An educated woman understands her own body, is aware of what is good for it or bad for it, keeps track of her health, and makes decisions as best she can based on thinking as well as feeling. An educated woman informs herself. She doesn't wait for somebody to walk up, sit her down in a chair, tie her arms to it, and feed her information. She goes out and looks for it. An educated woman does not take no for an answer without a reason why. An educated woman doesn't accept anything anybody says as incontrovertible truth because that person is famous, tall, short, male, female, or any other label. An educated woman believes that she is important in and of herself as a human being. An educated woman understands that what is important in this life is what you do, even more than what you say. And an educated woman understands that what you believe is best illustrated by what you do. I do my best, ladies and gentlemen, to educate people, young people in my job, people out there in Blog Talk Radio land, people in our Patriot families, and to educate myself. I want to know things. I want to find out things. I was taught by my father that the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And I teach that to my students as well. And if I'm asked a question to which I do not know the answer, I will tell them so, and then, thank God for computers, do my best to find the answer for them. Not because it's my job, not because I want to impress them, not because somebody will report me if I don't, but because it's my nature to teach. And it's my nature to learn. And the two things go hand in hand. Our current definition of an educated woman has fallen into the cesspool of liberal progressive dictionarial shenanigans. Now, an educated woman is one who knows all about the internet and where to find the best birth control pills and condoms and who to go to the minute she thinks she's pregnant so she can get an abortion. Or as our president puts it, she knows what to do so she won't be punished by a baby. Today's educated young woman on the liberal progressive calendar, if you will. Believe me, I prefer the pinups of the 1940s to the liberal progressive woman. Is all about, I get to do whatever I want with no consequences. I get to go anywhere, do anything, say anything, be anybody, do anybody, and I don't have to have any responsibility about it. I dislike vehemently the progressive liberal pinup girl. If that progressive liberal pinup girl were my daughter or my sister or my granddaughter, I would take her aside and give her a few home truths. Number one of which is that you are not merely your reproductive organs. There is more to you than that. And the only thing about you that's important to you is that you are going to have a very difficult and very sad life. will never find out what you are capable of. You have built yourself a cage, and you will live the rest of your life locked up in it. Education, ladies and gentlemen, is not a right. Liberal progressives want to tell you that it is. It's not. It is a good. And I don't mean to get all platonic and, you know, what is the good Alcibiades here? But it is a good. It is a good thing, a desirable thing, something that people want because it's of value to them. But it is not a right. Education does not come from where rights come from. Education comes from what God gave us, our own curiosity and our functioning intellect and our brain. The desire to learn is the right, because that's what's God-given. Education is the good we seek with that right of intellectual, mental freedom. Liberty, liberty across the board, the freedom of opportunity to be what the best in you allows you to be. That's the right. Education is a good tool that will help you achieve that. But it isn't automatic magic shot in the arm. Here, get this nice little pill, swallow it, and you've got a bachelor's degree. Get this shot, and you've got a master's. Get these two shots, and you've got a doctorate. It doesn't work that way. You cannot be educated if you don't desire to learn. I can recite Shakespeare to my kitty cats all day long, and they are not going to be able to give me half soliloquy when I'm done. I could recite Hamlet's soliloquy to a classroom full of my little in-school suspension miscreants 25 times an hour, if I said it really, really quickly. And that wouldn't guarantee that any one of them would understand what it meant or want to remember it when they heard it. One or two of them might. One of them might memorize it. One of them might be so intrigued that they want to go out and get the complete works of Shakespeare and try to wade through it. But there's no guarantee of that either. We cannot guarantee, ladies and gentlemen, that we will have an educated population any more than we can guarantee that we'll all live forever in this corporeal body. What we can guarantee and should guarantee, in spite of progressive liberalism, is the opportunity to become educated. Truly educated. Not just fed garbage from one source and not allowed to look anywhere else. The educated woman knows that no two children are exactly alike, any more than no two adults are exactly alike. The educated woman, if she is a mother of more than one child, knows that even if they're identical twins, they will have differences, even if it's fingerprints. An educated woman knows that what works for one child in the way knowledge is presented might not work for another one in her same family. But the liberal progressive mentality has designed a one-size-fits-all common core and national standards for our public education system, while giving lip service to the idea that, well, everybody should progress at their own pace, with their own strengths and weaknesses dealt with and accommodated so they learn in the way that's best for them. And these are supposedly, quote-unquote educated people who are coming up with this? If they're educated men and women, I am a Galapagos tortoise who has been magically transformed into something resembling a female. Education. Education, ladies and gentlemen, and being educated is not about solely academics or curriculums or grades or tests or evaluations or individualized education plans or behavioral improvement plans or anti-bullying kumbaya sessions. Being educated, being an educated person, means being encouraged and given the opportunity to exercise that part of us given to us by God, the curious, inquiring, functioning mind. The girls in my classes, in my ISS room, quite often are young ladies who have just discovered that they are attractive to young gentlemen. They have blossomed, as we used to say when I was young. And because they're 12, 13, 14 years old, that overwhelming blossom kind of shuts off the thinking part for a while. And the most important thing in their lives is giggle, gossip, flirt, come as close to violating the dress code as you can without getting caught. And I get those too. They're not yet educated young women. They will be if they survive puberty. But right about now, they're not. Because the type of education they are seeking is physical education, but not gym. And that kind of physical education has consequences that the liberal progressive view of a woman's worth is removing. Because we don't want to punish them with a baby. We want them to experience and explore their sexuality in a safe way. Another progressive lie. It isn't safe. It's never safe. Safety means no possibility of failure, no possibility of bad luck, no possibility of accident, no possibility of danger, no possibility of risk. And that's not being alive. There is a risk in everything that we do. There is a risk in discovering the joys of our physical sexuality for both boys and girls. But the risk of consequences that can be life-shattering is a little bit higher for girls, because of that incredible gift we have of being able to nurture and produce a new life. And when we teach our young women, we educate them to believe that either this is a horrible curse, or it's really, really good if we leave out the giving life part. What kind of women, what kind of educated women are we sending out there to be functioning citizens, self-governing individuals, and part of a self-governing nation? Are we teaching them that somebody will always step in so you don't have to be responsible for your choices? Are we teaching them you're not complete or whole or important unless you are engaging in this activity frequently as you think or somebody else thinks you ought to be? That's what defines you? I have said before on this show that progressives remind me a lot of 13-year-old middle schoolers. And the progressive educated woman very much reminds me of that 13-year-old little girl who blossomed all of a sudden, and everything above the neck went to sleep. Looks like we have somebody on the line, folks. Let's break up a bit and see who's calling in tonight. Hello there. Hello. Hello. Can you hear me? Hello.
I'm here. It's Lynn.
I figured it was you, honey. I recognize the area code. How was it, dear?
It's going well. It's beautiful weather here. And I had basically the AM radio on during most of this nonsense at the DNC. And I tell you, I don't know if you've heard some of the clips on the AM radio stations where they're talking, where some of these different news people like Peter Schiff and others who had gone around and asked these drones, literal drones, you know, these questions, you know, to see if they could tap into anything close to cognitive thinking. Well, what one person asked was...
National Convention? My God, It's finding cognitive thinking there is worse than trying to find violets in the middle of the glacier, for heaven's sake.
Exactly. One of the questions was, are you pro-choice? And of course they all say yes. And they go, well, what about pro-choice for large lemonade drinks or soda drinks or, you know, pro-choice for light bulbs? And, I mean, the diatribe that came out of the mouth, I don't believe in, you know, you have to choose what's good for your body because obesity costs money, they pay taxes anyway. And so what the conclusion is, they're pro-choice if you agree with their choice.
Their choice, exactly. There was a guest on the radio for Glenn Beck last week, and I was listening to her. She broadcasts out of St. Louis. I think her first name was Dana. And she was talking about, that was part of what sparked tonight's topic. She was talking about the Democratic Party being the party of no choice, for women anyway. Because the only choice you have is to be what Code Pink dressed up as.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only worth you have. You aren't anything else. You're totally focused on that one key part of you.
So apparently these people, unbeknownst to them because they're so uneducated, which is also part of your topic, that they are fascistic in their thinking because they believe that their little group or their Democrat Party or whatever or their powers that be should be able to dictate to everyone by force to think the way they do and choose the way they choose. This is the fallacy and the evil of it. I'm glad I wasn't behind the microphone because I'd have told them exactly that.
I think you
probably would have got knocked on my bare ear, but.
Well, you just smacked him in the head with a microphone. And you and I both. And
true.
I wouldn't in the least because I probably would do the same. Only I have a tendency to use my tongue instead of blunt objects, but, you know, it's the same impulse. One of the reasons I chose tonight's topic, and one of the reasons I've addressed it as I have, is because I remember the women's movement's inception. You know, I was born in 1946. I was in college, and I graduated from high school in 1965, finished college in 1969. So I was around for the women's movement, the hippie years, free love, the sexual revolution, all that stuff.
Yep.
And I never had a lot of real confidence in the women's movement because I didn't think I needed a whole bunch of people marching around in the streets to tell me that I should do what I thought was right. It never occurred to me that I needed government to do that because I have never felt intimidated by the fact that I'm female in my life. Never. And that was because I was not taught to feel intimidated because I was female. I was taught that I'm a human being.
Right. Well, this is that whole groupthink mentality of the progressive left, that everybody is in a little pocket, whether you're gay, whether you're straight, whether you're this, whether you're that, you're a female. You're, and everybody in these little labeled groups has some victimology. I mean, they're just boo-hooing. I'm a poor victim because of, you know, fill in the blank. It is insanity.
It is. The idiocy of groupthink. For example, I have a very good friend who's gay, who just married his brother. He's also a conservative. You can't. It's the idea that, and it goes back to Marx, and it goes back to the political philosophers of the 19th century who were trying to find, it's to search for the rule of everything. The absolute formula that will describe everything. I, too, can be omniscient. I have the key. The only way they can do it is if they redesign us all into mechanistic pieces of a giant machine. They look at everything that way. They don't look at... It's because they deny spirit. They have to. Because if they allow spirit to exist, that leads to the idea of something greater than humans. And they still are stuck in Wagner's Ring Cycle, Gallerdammerung.
They deny science.
Exactly.
We're flesh and blood. I mean, you know, it's insane.
We're human. We are not cogs. We are not ants.
Robots.
Robots. We are not the behaviorist's favorite little rat in the mazes. And I did not like the behaviorists either. They're useful.
Right.
You get a nice complacent client who wants to be behaviorist out of doing some negative activity. But as far as a way of understanding people, a way of educating people, no thank you. But that's basically the route they've taken. It started with Dewey, and it has continued over and over again.
Well, you've just described the difference between education and indoctrination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this is where we are at right now with the crossroads and the division in this country. People like yourself and people chat room and myself, we're cognitive thinking beings, and many of us have that higher spiritual awareness, which is vital, I believe, to any civil society, or even a caveman, if you will. It's the whole thing that they're, you know, it's all about control. It's Plato's Republic right down to the letter. So
it's philosopher kings. It's the progressive liberal idea of an educated woman. To them, an educated woman is an indoctrinated woman. It is a woman who is told her only value is her reproductive system, and her only function is to engage in its peripheral activities as often as possible with no consequences.
And make sure that every taxpayer pays for it, too.
Exactly. You know, it's my job to make sure you can hop from bed to bed and not have to worry about getting pregnant. No, it's not. I'm sorry, honey. The best advice I have ever heard for not getting pregnant was Rush Limbaugh saying, keep your knees together. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think we need a new campaign slogan on our side. The bank is closed.
I like that one. I like that one. And no new branches are opening either.
It's absurd.
It's,
I know.
I think the reason I get so uptight about this, and I try not to be strident, but sometimes I can't help it. I truly do prefer a calm, reasoned, happy, comfortable atmosphere where people can discuss ideas and differ with one another with the freedom to say what they think without getting pejorative about it or making it a personal attack because somebody disagrees with you. But we don't have that right now because I think this is the most polarizing time in our history since the Civil War. Because we have two very, very clearly defined paths, and they are not compromisable. There isn't any bipartisan way to take a bit from this one and a bit from that one because they are going in opposite directions. We can't travel east and west at the same time, except in Williamsburg, and for about blocks. And that really is true, by the way. Yes, you, in Williamsburg, you can go east and west at the same time in the same road with turning a car around. But Williamsburg is another story in another place. In general, you can't do it. And that's basically where we are right now. It's either hell-bent for leather into progressive socialism.
I know.
Hell-bent for leather into the Founding Fathers' view of an educated population ruling themselves. Looks like Ron's on the phone. Let's see if he has something he wants to say tonight. Hang on a bit. Hi, Ron.
Ladies, how are you?
We are
fine,
doing
sir.
Great.
How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I just got back from dinner with my lovely bride. And
good.
Terrific.
Was enjoying the conversation. And, you know, it just seems to me that we're almost back at ground zero where we were a couple of years ago when we were talking about all these very same things, but maybe you know, the majority of our audience didn't understand it at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe, you know, more of our audience does understand it now. And for those that are listening, if you have not read Plato's Republic, I encourage you. You don't have to read the entire exhaustive concordance.
Get the cliff notes.
you nearly need to read the first one-third, if that, and you will have it down pat. You don't. I have not read the whole thing. I don't desire to. I didn't need to get any further than about the first third of the book, and I said, wow, okay, case closed.
Mm-hmm.
I see where this is headed.
Yeah.
And that was 380 B.C., and so it's easy to understand where this ideology comes from. The
mm-hmm.
sad thing is that, you know, I don't think that Plato was, well, in the style that it was written, it wasn't that he was advocating that.
Mm-hmm.
He was posing it to the generals, the
mm-hmm.
military men in the room, as well. We could do this, and it would be a perfect society. And he had them all eating out of the palm of his hand. But
uh-huh.
I think he did it out of sarcasm, not out
mm-hmm.
of, I believe this is really possible.
Yeah. It's the bad part of our current situation, over and above the economy stinking and the fact that we are no longer convinced that we really are a good people in a good country, or at least they're trying to convince us we aren't. The very worst aspect is the victim mentality, as you said, as Linda was talking about. We have done, by our apathy and by our not paying attention, so much harm in allowing this to happen. Watched it. I've watched it since the 1960s in the Civil Rights Movement. I have seen victimology overtake what used to be a country of opportunity and turn it into a mewling concatenation of babies all whining for the same breast instead of people, adult people, going out there building and doing and exploring and inventing and creating. That is what in the end will kill us if we do not stop it. We cannot allow our kids to buy this hook, line, and sinker. We can't.
I know.
Well, you know, I'm reading a book right now, which I find very informative to give you kind of an insight on some of the presidents. And it's The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Presidents from Wilson to Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a newfound hero, which is Calvin Coolidge.
Mm-hmm.
And Coolidge, and this is from his speech at Lincoln Day dinner, and he said, "I agree perfectly with those who wish to relieve the small taxpayer by getting the largest possible contribution from the people with large incomes.
Mm-hmm.
However, if the rates on large incomes are so high that they disappear, the small taxpayer will be left to bear the entire burden.
Mm-hmm.
If on the other hand, the rates are placed where they will produce the most revenue from large incomes, then the small taxpayer will be relieved."
Mm-hmm.
I heard Mike Church today talking on his show about Ronald Reagan and trickle-down mm-hmm. economics that everyone, the liberal progressives, just love to beat up. And he said, but the point they always miss is the fact that trickle-down economics under Reagan did not grow the national debt. Government spending did.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Trickle-down economics actually produced more revenue for the government, which encouraged the government to spend more.
And, you know, this whole idiot slogan, building the American economy from the bottom up, is absurd. How many people are, well, no, I shouldn't ask how many people are stupid enough to buy it, because there are lots of them out there who are. But I have never in my life worked for a poor man. And
nope.
Neither is anybody else. And this country used to believe that success was a goal that was laudable. As Susana Martinez said, el sueño americano es el éxito. The American dream is success, and it always has been. The opportunity to reach success, not guaranteed success, but a shot at it. That's what this was supposed to be. If you have any knowledge of the history of the men and women who founded this nation, who came here from the English settlers and the immigrants in the 1800s, every single one of them left where they were because they were locked into a position where they never, ever, ever could have a chance to be successful. They were locked into younger son, peasant, serf, yeoman, whatever. They could not rise above their station. By law, they were not allowed to succeed. They were doomed and sentenced and locked in from birth, and they could never be anything else. They left and came here because that was not the case. They didn't leave there and come here because all the Indians were standing on the shore with great big care packages and new condos.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is what I fear. You know, when they talk about, especially in the Obama administration, and the leftist ideology, and I know that the right does it too, because they're no saints. Taxing and taxing and taxing the upper echelon, just like they're doing in France. How long do you think before every damn rich person in France flees that country?
Why do you know this insane bashing Romney with Bain Capital sending jobs overseas? Well, why in the devil do you think they went overseas? Because if they'd had everything made here, nobody could afford to buy it.
That's crazy.
You know, this is exactly the point that people don't understand, Terry. I read an article the other night where, you know, they said, oh, this is how we save the economy. Henry Ford did it in 1914, and it worked.
Yeah.
And their answer is to double everyone's salary. I'm like, are you insane? And
it's
these people are, and they're, the comments to the article, the author of the article is ignorant enough, but they're presumably in a position to write an article for a national publication. But here is the masses. And they're lauding this as some kind of grandiose idea. And I couldn't refrain. I had to comment, and I said, judging from the responses I've read here, you people have never heard of the term inflation. And I just left it at that. Because if you double the amount of dollars chasing the same amount of goods, you end up with increasing prices, which is what we have now.
Exactly.
And it is perfect. It's a perfect example of why government stimulus does not work. If the American public is not confident enough in the monetary system to go out and expend their hard-earned dollars on goods and services, the government injecting money into the system is a false signal, and the people still aren't spending their hard-earned dollars.
No, they aren't.
So all it's doing is driving the taxpayer deeper in debt and producing nothing but fictitious numbers on a balance sheet. Period.
Exactly. Creative accounting, as they used to call it. It's the inability to understand that the reason capitalism works is because it makes sense is part of the liberal mental condition.
Right.
Capitalism is not some gift of God from, or Moses brought it down on the tablets. Capitalism works because it works. It's a good idea because it works. not it's a good idea because God said so, or Reagan said so, or Coolidge said so, or Plato said so. It's a good idea because it works over and over and over again, supply and demand. Understanding that if I want something that I can't make for myself, I have to use some form of currency to purchase it. And if the person who is making that cannot make enough money to make more of them when more people want them, then guess what? I'm the one who has it, and there aren't any more. It just doesn't.
I had a customer today, and this poor woman, God bless her, she's going through a divorce, a single mom, and all these things, you know, and she's telling me all of her woes. And mm-hmm. she needed a new starter on her Nissan Xterra, and it was $302.61. Now this is after I gave her a coupon that she didn't possess. Mm-hmm. I did all the adjustments. I trimmed my margins to the bare minimum that I could to try and help her. She called me 5 more times, laying guilt trips on me, and I told her, I said, "Ma'am, mm-hmm. I don't think you understand. I work for this company. We have overhead, we have operating costs, and I have a guideline that I have to maintain. I have to stay within that guideline. If I am not staying within that guideline, I very well could lose my job. Uh-huh. It's not my money to give to you. It's not my uh-huh. products or services or labor to give to you. It doesn't belong mm-hmm. to me."
Exactly.
She says, "Well, I found the starter at AutoZone for $99, and I've got a guy that'll put it on for $100. And I said, "If that's what you need to do, then that's what you need to do. You know, I'm not trying to be rude." She says, "Well, can't you buy that starter for $99? I said, "I can, but I have to pay a light bill and gas bill, and I have to pay
labor costs,
and I have to pay Social Security and income taxes."
Uh-huh.
And her response was great. "So I've got to spend an extra $75 just so some corporation can make money off me." And I, you know,
oh my God,
I wanted to say, "You bitch."
Mm-hmm. I know.
Not to mention that if you have my company repair your vehicle, you have a nationwide warranty,
uh-huh.
all over the country, parts and yeah. labor. If you have your backyard guy put that starter on from AutoZone and it goes bad in 2 months, you're going to have to pay him another $100 labor to change it a second time.
Exactly. Yep. That's an example, Ron, of the liberal educated woman.
Well, I understand why she's going through a divorce. I really do.
So do I. If I were a man married to that, I'd probably just kill her and save the money in a divorce cost. The absurdity of demonizing the idea of a company having to make a profit baffles me, too. I have never met anybody who wants to make anything and sell it for what it costs them to make it. Not even the housewife who's putting up her jam and selling it at the church bazaar.
I'm telling you
making lemonade doesn't do that.
This is the flipping mentality I'm seeing. And we live in the area that I live in and the area that my store is in a very high rent district. But it's also, our demographics is, it is the largest area of credit card debt in the state of Georgia.
Wow.
And I actually had a lady come in this morning. She thought she had a nail in her tire. We pulled it out. It was this little tack. It didn't go through. And I told her, I said, "Ma'am, there it didn't go through. There's no charge. But we did notice you had 2 bulbs out on your car. And it has an indicator on the dash that says, you know, position lamp out left front. It tells you. You got lights burned out."
Uh-huh.
I put a price on the ticket. It was $42.61. I said, "Would you like me to change them for you while you're here?" She said, "I have to get to work. Can I bring it back at 5? I said, "Certainly." And I showed her the ticket. And the bottom line, she knew what the cost was. She brought it back at 5. We put the lamps in. She's up there to pay. And she says, "Well, that just seems like an awful lot for a couple of bulbs. That's just very expensive." I said, "Ma'am, the bulbs are $3.99 each, but, I mean, I've got a guy out here with 35 years of experience and $200,000 worth of tools that's working on your vehicle. What only took him 15 minutes? So I should penalize him because he's really good at his job?"
Yeah. And given
and
the fact
says,
that...
She says, well, it just doesn't seem fair. And I looked at her and I said, you know what, ma'am, what would be fair? And she says, well, I just want to pay what you think would be fair. And I said, I'm asking you, what do you want to pay? She said, well, I was thinking $25. At $25 it is, ma'am. Yeah, I mean, you know, what do you do? You know?
Yeah, I mean, you can't get people to, and you know what, Ron? That same woman at her job, if she was told she had to take a half of her salary cut, okay?
Oh, she'd have a fit.
Of course.
Yeah.
She'd be ready to shoot the CEO.
But she'll have no problem running down to Starbucks in her $45,000 SUV to buy a damn $5 latte, you know?
Exactly.
The mentality, it just pisses me off. It's like someone owes them something. And from now on, I think...
mentality.
It just dawned on me tonight. And the next time I have a customer complaining to me about the prices, I'll say, well, ma'am, you know, if you've got an issue with the prices that we're forced to charge, you should talk to your congressman and your senator and your state legislators for all the regulatory burdens and the tax burdens they're placing on the cost of running business.
Exactly.
Thank you. That's awesome.
That is exactly it. And the unfortunate part, as I said before, this is an example of what an educated person is in the liberal mindset. The indoctrinated person who has been said, everything is somebody else's fault, it's never mine. Everything is owed to me, and I don't owe anybody anything.
And you have no responsibility for yourself or your own actions or your own poor decisions. It's not your fault.
Exactly. It's not your fault. Believe me. I see this all the time. As I was saying earlier, with what we're creating as educated young women, when we're busily telling them, you're not responsible for who you sleep with or how often you do so, we're going to make it easy for you to be as promiscuous as you like with no consequences.
Well, of course, sorry. And we've already seen the mentality, and I'm not trying to diminish those women that have been abused. But we encourage young women to put themselves in very treacherous situations.
Yes, we do.
And then the next morning, if they're not happy with what transpired the night before, regardless if everybody was blown out of their mind on dope or at booze, now I can file rape charges.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to bear some responsibility in your behavior and your actions, and you've got to be smart enough not to place yourself in those conditions where that is even possible.
Exactly. And we used to teach personal responsibility. We used to teach, both boys and girls, that engaging in sexual activity is a risk, and there are consequences. And you have to be aware of those consequences, which is why we didn't encourage 12-year-olds to explore their sexuality. Because 12-year-olds have no concept that there are consequences to anything anyway.
That's why we have this age of majority idea and minority laws in the United States, because we recognize that as a society... That should be a line that we draw with government, that, you know what, if you're under the age of 16 or 17, and quite honestly, most 17 and 18 and 19 and 20 and 22-year-olds I know aren't responsible enough to make that decision either. We have to have a cutoff somewhere. And, you know, at least, my God, while your parents are still fully responsible for you under the law, there needs to be consequences, you know, and especially for the older guys that are going after the younger girls. I'm sorry. I understand that love knows no boundaries, but there are many predators out there that take advantage of the naivete on both the male and female side. And we look at it very differently when it's like the school teachers, you know, sleeping with their students. And the dads are like, right on, son, you know.
Exactly.
It's a conquest, and it shouldn't be that way.
No, it shouldn't. This is the holdover, and this is the result of the craziness of the 60s. Because the liberated woman, okay, I hate that phrase. I didn't have to be liberated, damn it, okay? I wasn't in chains. I wasn't a victim. I wasn't an idiot who could only find herself useful in bed with somebody. I was a thinking human being who happened to be female. And I was brought up to believe that. But we're doing, in the name of liberating women, we're putting into a cage more horrible and more risky than the kind of cage my mother's generation was put in. I've been told the best thing and the only thing is wife and motherhood. At least wife meant there was somebody to raise the kid. Now
right.
We're just saying, you know, if you're a wife, being a wife doesn't mean taking care of anybody but yourself. Well, I'm sorry. Being a wife or a husband means taking care of somebody else as well as yourself.
It's a moral obligation, period.
It is.
It's called responsibility.
Yes, sir.
You know, I heard my favorite guy on the radio this morning, Mike Church. He's the only one I can bear to listen to. And
mm-hmm.
I had to turn the radio off. I was ready to pull my hair out. They were interviewing people outside of the DNC.
Oh, my God.
And this woman's up there, and he says, so you're pro-choice. And she says, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
He said, so you believe that people have a right to choose whatever light bulb they want to have in their home. And she
mm-hmm.
says, oh, well, no, not if they're damaging the planet. I think the government needs to step in. And he's like, oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
So you have no problem with killing an unborn child, but light bulbs now, by God, there's no choice there. The government should dictate that. I mean, are you flipping kidding me?
Yep.
That is the insanity of these people.
Yes, dear, it is.
He went on this whole tirade about, oh, so I see what you're saying is, you know, I don't care what the Bible says, and I don't care what the traditional role of women is, even if you don't believe in the Bible, that I'm not here to have your children and raise them and be your slave and a slave to these children until they grow up. I want to live my own life, and I'm going to do this, and it's my choice and my body, but you're going to buy the light bulbs I tell you you have to buy because you could damage the planet.
You know,
unbelievable.
It's
beyond the double standard.
I know, it's the liberal mental disorder, and it is a mental disorder because it doesn't make any sense. No rational individual could espouse the things that come out of these people's mouths. You simply cannot make it rational, let alone logical. It is totally outside the bounds of any
reality.
Type of thinking person's view of reality, Linda. It really is.
Ronald Reagan said it best when dealing with the Muslims and the whole Beirut and Lebanon thing, when he walked away and he said, you cannot reason with unreasonable people.
You can't.
That's right.
You cannot educate someone who is choosing to be indoctrinated and refusing to be educated.
And I think
that's what we've got.
I think going to the scripture, that has to be exactly what Christ was talking about when he said, don't cast your pearl before swine.
Yep.
Yep.
You
That's
cannot reason it. With unreasonable people. So stop trying.
No, that's pretty much it. If they had a brain, they wouldn't be liberals.
Yeah, boy, oh, howdy. I just,
yep.
You have to marvel at the fact that these people see themselves as educated and so much smarter than everyone else, and it just blows my mind.
Yep.
Mine too. Well, guys, I hate to cut our discussion and our laugh fest short, but we've only got about a minute and a half left of tonight's show, and I
Tough
do want to tell
thank
everybody
so
out there, thank you, Linda, and thank you, Ron, for giving me a laugh and the pearls of wisdom before this happy little female human being, and believe me, I don't oink and I don't have a curly tail. So your pearls are appreciated. I want to tell everybody out there, please join us every night of the week for our radio shows here on Blog Talk Radio, and come and visit us at www.patriotfamilies.com. And next week, we will have a surprise guest host for Patriot Education, since I will be unable to do the show next week, but I promise I will be back in full feather and hopefully reasonably articulate in 2 weeks. And tune in next Thursday at 7 p.m. to find out who's going to be talking about education here on Patriot Education on Blog Talk Radio. I remind everybody out there, be an educated woman and an educated man. Be the kind of person who never stops learning. Remember, you are the nation, and thank God for all of you. Have a wonderful evening, everyone. Blessed be.